The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hi, this is Kevin McCullough. Thanks for listening to the Christian Outlook podcast, where we cover today's issues from a perspective that honors your Christian faith. Our podcast is brought to you through a partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Here's another piece I trust you'll enjoy.
I'm interviewing a very dear friend of mine whose name escapes me. Just kidding. His name is Pastor Erwin Lutzer, or Lutzer. How do you say it, Pastor?
I call it Lutzer.
Lutzer. Well, what do you know?
That's the correct pronunciation.
You were the head pastor of Moody Church for how many years? 36 years. And I had the privilege of speaking there while you were the pastor. Now you're the pastor emeritus of the Moody Church, famous church in Chicago. You've written many, many books. And you do an unbelievable Billy Graham impersonation, which I'd like to get to before the program is over. But right now, we're talking to you about your new book. It's called We Will Not Be Silenced, Responding Courageously to Our Culture's Assault on Christianity. This is a little bit up my alley. In fact, I endorsed the book, although you didn't put it on the cover, so you're now dead to me. So my friend Erwin Lutzer, why did you write this book?
Eric, I began to realize that the radical left in America does not believe that America can be fixed. It has to be destroyed and rebuilt on a cultural Marxist foundation. Classical Marxism was primarily economic, and cultural Marxism says we can bring about a Marxist state if we capture law, capture education, the media, vote for the right people. We can bring it about without a bloody revolution. So what
you
Marx
can't use
did
the word bloody
is,
on the air. That's a swear word.
Well,
you mean literally a bloody red.
I'm talking about Russia, and I'm talking about China, and I think it would
I
be correct.
I know exactly what you're talking about. And France.
Yeah, I think that it's okay to use the word bloody
when it
comes to
there. Yes, I was joking.
Now
and again, I will joke just to make sure you're listening.
That's right. And I'm not going to joke, but you can be the joker
today.
I'll try. So the point is, what I do is I show that cultural Marxism explains the vilification of our history, the breaking of our monuments and so forth, because what they are saying is America is so bad, it has to be rebuilt. And on the other side of the revolution, there will be income, equality, the end of white supremacy, and everybody's going to live happily ever after. Now, what I also do, Eric, and this is absolutely critical, I show that Marxism is applied to race. I'm from the great city of Chicago, that city of righteousness and love that you've heard about.
Right.
And Saul Alinsky in Chicago, I talked to a man who worked with him. He said that we had good plans to help the under-resourced communities, but he said Alinsky blocked them because he said, don't solve problems, use them. What he decided to do is to apply cultural Marxism to race. Now, you know this, Eric, that Marxism is based on the whole idea of oppression.
Yeah.
So the point is that we're going to divide people into the oppressed and into oppressors, and we're going to divide them, and we're going to blame the oppressed people. That is to say, they will blame the oppressors for their condition, and the conflict will be endless. That's why, Eric, these diversity studies in our universities are not intended to bring about reconciliation or solution. They are intended until the oppressed overcome the oppressors.
Correct.
And by the way, Eric, very critical, Christianity has an answer for that because it says at the foot of the cross, the differences between us are not that great. We are all sinners. We're all created in God's image. But critical race theory, which is discussed in this book that God wants everybody to read.
We Will Not Be Silenced by
that's
Erwin Lutzer.
Critical race theory keeps tearing apart what God brought together in the death of the Lord Jesus Christ. So people have to understand that, that Christianity has an answer. And then very quickly, Eric, many people don't realize that the whole issue of freedom of speech today is also based on cultural Marxism. Marcuse, who was a Marxist in the 60s, I remember when
he lived. The Frankfurt School.
Yes.
Herbert Marcuse, or Marcuse,
right. Yes.
As they say in Chicago.
Right. He taught that if we allow freedom of speech, the oppressors, the capitalists, will always win. So there's only one way that we can bring about the Marxist state, and that is to tell the oppressors it is time for them to be quiet and it is time for the oppressed to speak.
Who said that?
Marcuse. Directly, he says that.
You're filling in some gaps in my understanding of this, and it's wonderful. It's one of the reasons I love you, because you really know this stuff. And in your book, We Will Not Be Silenced, I know you cover this, but it's very interesting to understand how this happened. What you've just said is that Herbert Marcuse, who's really the head of the Frankfurt School, along with Gramsci, really brought this stuff into America. And you're saying that he actually said that we have to silence our critics. In other words, this is deeply antithetical to the American way of life, to American values. We don't believe in a free market of ideas. We are afraid that if the people who disagree with us get a voice, that they may argue against us and win. We can't allow for that. So they care about power and not about truth.
Exactly. In fact, I quote Marcuse exactly saying that. You know, Frederick Douglass, who was a black leader in the 1800s, he says that freedom of speech is the great dread of tyrants.
Yep.
And so freedom of speech is really where it's at. Now, one of the most interesting chapters, if I might humbly say, is on propaganda. How does propaganda work? The purpose of propaganda is to so shape people's view of reality that even when confronted with a mountain of evidence, yeah, they will not change their minds. So people must understand that propaganda, and I discuss how this happens, collective demonization perfected in Russia. Russia says that one person is a dissenter. Everybody else chimes in. Yes, you know. You wrote a book about Bonhoeffer. I wrote a book about Nazi Germany. That's actually what brought us together. And in Nazi Germany, churches put up a swastika on their church door saying, when you come for the Christians, don't come for us because we are on your side. So today, people are asking, am I woke enough to be seen as virtuous? Woe to the person who is on the wrong side of wokeness, right? And so what you have is this herd mentality. Now, one other thing, and I know that you're full of other questions, but you have to understand that propaganda works when it comes to language. When Hitler starved children, he called it putting them on a low-calorie diet, for example. Killing the Jews was the cleansing of the land. That's the way it worked in Hitler's Germany. And then what you need is you need a group to hate, you need fear to keep people in line, and you need to bargain with them and say, we're taking away your freedoms, but in exchange for those freedoms, we are giving you a great gift, and that is the gift of security. And that's what is really happening. Now, beyond that, we could go into some of the details as to how propaganda works. But, Eric, the main thing is this, that propaganda works this way. Tell people what they want to hear, but give them what you want them to have. Social justice. Social justice sounds like a good thing. By the way, the two greatest misused words are social justice and equality. So you have environmental justice. You have, you know, marriage justice, you have reproductive justice, right? These words are misused to get a point across. You tell people what they want to hear, but then what you do is you give them what you want them to have. So I tell people this, when it comes to propaganda, look at the label, but then open the box and find out what's in the box, because the label might not fit the box.
And if you don't have time to think that carefully, let me just cut to the chase and say social justice is injustice. It is absolutely injustice. You brought up so many important things, and I guess I just want to be clear. The book folks are talking about is We Will Not Be Silenced. You already know Erwin Lutzer is a master communicator, and these things are very important that we understand where this came from, how it happened. One thing I just want to add is that you said that the German Christians who didn't really know what they believed, they would just kind of, you know, say, oh, we're going to put the swastika flag outside of our building. The swastika was not what it is today in 1934 or 33 or 35. And they just thought, hey, we're good guys. Leave us alone. Today, churches are hanging out the BLM flag or the rainbow flag. They really don't know what they believe. They're just afraid of being attacked. They're afraid, and they just say, we'll say anything as long as you leave us alone. And so they're hanging out those flags. They're virtue signaling. The Germans did it with the swastika. It's a strange time that we're in, and the church needs to understand this. I hope that every pastor in America gets a copy of We Will Not Be Silenced. Tell us more.
Eric, people need to realize that I wrote the book, We Will Not Be Silenced, not to reclaim the culture. It may be too late for that, but to reclaim the church. Because I began to see that the church has been shamed into silence. People don't know exactly what they should say. And therefore, you know, even this business of we don't know which pronoun to use, you know, and what is my preferred pronoun? Somebody went up to a McDonald's and they said, well, what is your preferred pronoun? All that is to create so much confusion. We are so intimidated for saying the wrong thing that we become silent. So what I argue is that the Church of Jesus Christ is going to have to relearn lessons that the church has had to learn in the past. And you know something about that, having written your famous book on Bonhoeffer. And we are going to have to stand for truth and take the heat. If I might say this, the American Constitution is a remarkable document. I happen to have been born in Canada. I don't know if you remember that or not.
I never would have had you on this program if I knew that. I can't believe it. A Canadian in my studio? What an outrage. Bloody hell. Go ahead.
But
please.
You know
what? I'm going to show you.
God saves people all over the world.
Yeah, but not Canada.
You know,
Come on. Be realistic.
But I am an American citizen today, and the Constitution is a remarkable document. But I want to say this, that the Church of Jesus Christ was not even built on the American Constitution. The church was built on Jesus, and we're going to have to relearn the lessons that Christians have had to learn throughout the centuries, and we're not used to that. We think to ourselves, well, if we were the Christians that we should be, everything would sail along, and we'd be all very happy and continue to have our freedoms. But, Eric, the time is coming when the church is going to have to make up its mind. You're going to have the wokeness on one side, the social justice.
Right.
When somebody says, I think social justice is a gospel issue, I have no idea what they mean. I hope
Fortunately, they don't either.
Well, I hope that they don't mean that you have to believe in social justice to be saved, because I shout this from the housetops. I'm sorry if I'm getting too enthusiastic on your show.
No, you're getting just enthusiastic enough.
Okay. I shout this from the housetops. The gospel of Jesus Christ is not what we can do for Jesus. The gospel is what Jesus has done for us. And what we need to do is to keep that clear and make sure that we don't confuse the issues. And if somebody says, well, social justice is the fruit of the gospel, that's where we have the discussion, Eric, the difference between biblical justice and so-called social justice.
Don't you think a lot of this is a simple issue of moral cowardice? In other words, if we are teaching our kids about the price that has been paid for people to share the faith of Jesus, that people have throughout history had to pay with their blood, not just to share the gospel of Jesus, but to preserve freedom. It seems to me that we have ceased doing that in latter decades, and we've made it seem like this is all free and it's easy to get. there is a huge price to be paid. And when you hear the stories of the prices that were paid, I mean, my Bonhoeffer book is one example that people, they're inspired, they're moved, and they say, I want to be like that. Most people, I think, want to be like that when they see it. But often they're just not exposed to it. They don't see it. So they keep their mouths shut. They go with the flow.
All right, Eric, I'll give you an example from Germany since you wrote the Bonhoeffer book. Rebecca and I are in East Germany, which was under communism for 70 years. We're talking to a pastor. The pastor said, under communism, the communists said to the Christians, if you continue to go to church, you won't have a job and your children will not have an education. So 90% of the Christians capitulated and they said, well, you know, we need to live, et cetera, et cetera. About 10% didn't. And the 10% lived for Christ through great difficulty. Their children were not well educated. But here's the point that Christians need to think about. If you look at this from the standpoint of eternity, who made the better decision? Well, the answer is, of course, the ones who made the best decision are the ones who lived for Christ and took the consequences. And as a result of that, we honor them today. And to your point, when you have somebody like Bonhoeffer or some of the other pastors stand for Christ, there are others that do chime in. There were 700 pastors and priests who went to concentration camps. What the world is looking for is heroes who are able to stand, who are able to expose critical race theory in schools and so forth. And what they discover pretty soon is that other people are standing with them because they are beginning to say what we must do is to stand together against these theories.
I remember when I was an undergraduate in college, I was afraid to be on the wrong side of the woke crowd. I mean, that was in the 80s, but it's interesting how we are all cowards, but God says, I can do things in you. I can change you. And by the grace of God, he helped me to
somewhere see things. Somewhere along the line, you were changed.
At some point. Well, for me, I was dramatically born again around age 25. And it was a period of time. It took decades after that, really, for me to see some of these things. I've changed dramatically. And Bonhoeffer, writing the Bonhoeffer book was the biggest thing that changed me. But really what we've seen really since the election of Donald Trump, what's happening in this country, it's so horrified me that I just feel an obligation to speak out. This is an opportunity, folks. I remember when I was younger, there wasn't much to fight for. Everything was sort of okay. We seemed to be in a post-historical moment somehow. And in recent years, suddenly we've been plunged into a very different season. And it's a great thing to be able to stand for truth, to encourage people to do the same. It's a beautiful thing. So it really is an opportunity. I want to encourage people that you really want to be involved in this. Don't sit on the sidelines. You'll regret it. Erwin Lutzer, the book is We Will Not Be Silenced. What else is in this book that we should discuss?
Well, let's talk, for example, about socialism. You know that, have you ever noticed that socialists, by the way, somebody might say, why is a pastor interested in socialism? Why write a chapter on socialism? After all, you know, when you stop to think of it, you realize that the Bible doesn't lay out very much of a detail of an economic theory, although God is not a socialist. I prove that in the book. The reason is this, Eric, Americans have given $400 billion a year to charity. Go around the world and you see missionaries and mission agencies in other countries all funded by American money. Now, what you find about socialists is they always talk about how to divide the wealth. They never talk about creating wealth because
Bingo.
Socialism can't.
Bingo. Now, that's the key. I didn't really even understand that until a few years ago. It finally dawned on me what I was missing. And yes, divide the wealth. But is it possible to increase wealth, to grow wealth?
Yes,
I never
it is, Eric.
Why.
What
no,
you
it is.
Do is you print money.
No, we're not talking about that's fake wealth. We're talking about real wealth.
I know, but that's the only thing a socialist country can do.
Correct.
For example, if I had a pie here, I could divide it up in nice little neat categories so that we would have equity. and equality, income equality, I could divide that up. But when the pie is gone, the pie is gone. The only thing the government can do is print more money
right.
to fill in the gap. And that's why what I show in this chapter is very quickly it becomes clear that socialism becomes a paradise for parasites. And by the way, Eric, why is it that mice die in mouse traps? It's because they don't understand why the cheese is free. And what happens is there are people today who do not understand that socialism looks very attractive, but when you begin to think of it, it caters to laziness and to insufficiency. And I show that in the book. Could I quote Churchill? Surely
that's... I don't know. Could you?
Yes.
Go on. I dare you. Quote Churchill. Let's see what you have.
Churchill said that the great vice of capitalism is the unequal distribution of blessings, but the great blessing of socialism is the equal distribution of misery. So that's what Churchill said, and he was absolutely right. And, you know, what we need to do is to help people to understand that when you work for the government in a socialistic society, the money that you earn isn't yours. It belongs to the state, and the state gets to divide it up in accordance with whatever desires and whatever divvying they wish. Now, in about 1985, Rebecca and I were in Russia, and there was income equality, all right? So doctors in the hospital were essentially paid the very same as other people who worked in the hospital. Is it any wonder that there was a dearth of doctors in Russia? Of course not. The minute the government begins to control the economy, you begin to have a lot of corruption. You know, one other thing, and I know I'm going on about this, but I entitled the chapter, you know, that's capitalism is the disease, socialism is the cure. I point out that the opposite is true. I show that certainly capitalism may have a lot of corruption because corruption exists wherever human beings are, but socialism actually institutionalizes corruption and makes corruption necessary in order to survive. So people need to understand that even though it is initially attractive, in the end, it leads to absolute disaster. So what we must do is to stand against the socialistic trends that we have in our society today. And big government means that God is replaced by government, as Karl Marx wanted. You know, Karl Marx believed in the destruction of the family, and you know why. He said that men oppress their wives, parents oppress their children, they take them to church. God is the ultimate oppressor. So women have to work outside the home, and this becomes very important so that the state can raise the children and raise them in the beauties of godlessness and the beauties of socialism and the errors of Christianity.
Look, any kind of Marxism, BLM, which is cultural Marxism, they are anti-family. They're against black fathers in the home. People need to wake up and understand that these are Marxist organizations with Marxist anti-God, anti-American, anti-family views. Gosh, there's so much here. All I wanted from you was a cheap Billy Graham impression. That's all I was looking for, and I've gotten such a smorgasbord of things. When did the book come out?
In November.
Okay, so it's a pretty new book. This is so important. So many people don't understand this. So it's a joy to have a conversation with someone like you because you can unpack this and help us let the bells go off or the light bulbs go off, rather, where you realize this makes sense. I understand why people are fooled by this. I understand. But the great tragedy is how many pastors have been sucked into this. I mean, you were a pastor for so long. You're faithful. Are you amazed that they're being sucked into thinking this might be okay?
Yes, and let me say that oftentimes love is so misused. People don't realize, Eric, that love can be evil. You know, when Adam and Eve fell in the garden, they didn't stop loving. They just started to love the wrong things, lovers of pleasure, lovers of money, lovers of self. So somebody says, You know, what's wrong with same-sex marriage? I mean, what's wrong if two men love each other? Isn't more love better than less love?
I've never thought of that. Yeah.
It is evil to love what God has condemned.
Well, I'm glad we have a few minutes left with Dr. Erwin Lutzer. Folks, I keep bugging him because when we're getting together, we're not on the air. He imitates Billy Graham so brilliantly, and he just refuses to do it. He thinks, it would be self-serving. And I said, enough is enough. We're going to get Billy Graham himself. So, Dr. Graham, thank you.
And before Dr. Graham comes, this is the book that God wants everybody to have.
Right.
We will not be silenced.
Was that a Rhema word of knowledge you got, or you don't believe about that stuff?
And I have to say this, and this is of great importance. As a teenager, Billy Graham was my hero. My generation of teenagers was into Elvis, and I was into Billy, and I think I made the better choice. But to get to the point, this could be longer, but I'm only going to give an invitation like Billy Graham might give, and we'll give it a try. In a moment, I'm going to ask you to come, hundreds of you. You simply get up out of your seats, and I want you to come. And for the many of you who have joined us tonight by television, we'd like to send you some literature. We'd like to send you a book that has been a blessing to tens of thousands of people around the world, written by Pastor Lutzer. Just write to me, Billy Graham, Minneapolis, Minnesota. That's all the address you need, just Billy Graham, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Now until the same time next week, goodbye, and may the Lord bless you real good.
Wow, that was unbelievable. Okay, now look, I knew you were good. I didn't know you were that good to freak me out. Now let me ask you this. Do you believe in channeling? Did you just do that in the natural, or was there some kind of occultic force behind that? Because you're freaking me out.
It was in the national.
All right,
it was in the natural.
You did Billy Graham. Can you give us some Georgie Jessel?
No, I'm not sure that I know how he sounds.
No? That's key to doing the impression.
I'm culturally
illiterate. That's a key
illiterate.
To doing the impression. What about the Jimmy Stewart?
No. I used to do a long number of other people,
whoa.
But in my old age, I decided to stick with Billy.
All right. Can you give us a little George Beverly Shea?
No, but I could give you Cliff Barrows.
You could?
Absolutely. Cliff Barrows, and the older crowd will understand this. The younger crowd won't. And how do you do, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to a broadcast of the Hour of Decision, brought to you today under the auspices of the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association. And this is Cliff Barrows inviting you to stay tuned for this half hour of song and spoken word, as once again we present the songs of George Beverly Shea and the Crusade Choir with Ted Smith and Lorne Whitney at keyboard and console. Associate Evangelist Grady Wilson reads from God's Word. Jerry Bevan with a complete report on the crusade here in the nation's capital. And then, as always, a man with a message for these crisis days, Billy Graham.
Wow. Wow. You're freaking me out, man. You need to cut that out. There's some kind of sorcery, some dark arts involved. There's nobody could just do that in the natural. I don't believe it. Now, let me just say, it is just a joy, Dr. Pastor Erwin Lutzer, to know you. And I'm sorry you're not preaching regularly, because you have a mesmerizing, sonorous voice. And although that could put people to sleep, I guess.
Yes,
if the content,
yes.
If the exegesis is solid, that'll keep them awake.
Yes, definitely. And, you know, when you preach, Eric, I notice that the church becomes an adult nursery.
Is that true?
Yeah,
I'm glad. I don't know what you mean by that, because I'd hit
now,
you.
Now, here's what you need to do. This book can be gotten at Amazon or ChristianBook.com. We will not be
Amazon,
silenced.
Amazon, no kidding.
But if you want to hear me preach about various topics,
yeah,
you go to MoodyMedia.org. MoodyMedia.org. That's where I have blogs. That's where sermons are.
MoodyMedia.org?
Yeah.
Okay, how do you spell dot? And here's another question. We're out of time, but truly, it's a pity Pat Boone wasn't here, because I don't think anybody could have appreciated that more than he. He was here last night. He'll be here tonight. We're out of time. Erwin Lutzer, we love you. Thank you.
Thanks, Eric.
Thanks for listening to Christian Outlook. Our program is coming to you today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy.
It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. If you enjoy our podcast, take a moment and tell a friend to subscribe today.